Hello, everybody. Serena!
Eddie!
Got your headsets on?
I do. I do.
Got your big microphone?
I do.
I want me one of them big microphones.
I bet you do. I had a student call. I mean, not call. He emailed me, and he just ordered one.
He did? How much they cost?
About $1.50.
Well, shit, $1.50. He wouldn't do that.
$100.
Hey, mine's a lot more expensive than that.
What, your microphone?
Yeah. It's more than $1.50.
Well, $1.50 times 100.
The reason I realized that, I always think this thing works pretty good, except when I was being professionally taped the other day for some of the training for the Turnkey Flipping Academy.
Mm-hmm.
Shortail's got all that stuff coming out, you know, mm-hmm. like he's having a news conference for CNN.
Right.
And then I had my little deal, and he says, Eddie, you sound terrible. And then I put my headsets on, and she said, oh, yeah, that's much better.
Oh, okay. Mr. Mangan, you need a light on. You look my color.
Thank you, Serena. I think I've been sun a lot this week.
Well, Serena's being politically incorrect over here.
You're saying I'm dark, but she's light. How are you, Serena?
She's mad because she was feeling the burn, and now that deal's blowing up, so. He said in the news conference, you know, it ain't over, and because Hillary's got to go get all the superdelegates to vote for her and stuff. And anyway, this presidential election, it is going to be like some good watching. I may have to check out for 6 months just to watch CNN all day every day and watch what's going on.
It'll be interesting.
Wow.
Indeed.
There'll be some drama.
You know there will be.
Okay, Matthew. Everything good in Denver today? Sun come up in Denver?
Actually, it came up and now it's overcast again. It rained all day yesterday. It's like it's amazing. We left Dallas. Dallas turns out to be pretty. We come here, it's been pretty, and now it's raining. So I don't know if it's following Emily or the dog or I don't know what it's doing. But
I bet that's what it is.
I think it is.
What combo there?
We're just glad it's following.
Get away from
about three weeks worth of rain.
Yeah.
Done. All right, let's roll with it.
All right. Well, I think the first up we have Brian Legree. Nope, we have Paul. Sorry, I just misspoke. So let me go ahead and see if Paul is on the call. Got his hand up. Thank you, Paul. Go ahead, Paul.
Hello, how are you guys doing today?
Hey.
Paul, it has been an interesting day.
That's always good. It means there's learning opportunities are happening.
It's always good, but it's been an interesting day.
Well, we'll see if we can't make it a little easier for you.
We're going to have to explain to a student what a non-disclosure agreement means this afternoon.
Whoops!
Yeah.
Uh-oh.
They're looking at an asset, and apparently they sent somebody out climbing on the roof, and
climbing on the roof and telling the people to get out of my house, and they don't even know.
At all. Hate that.
Nope. I don't blame you.
You got to use more sense than that.
You got to be smart enough, that's for sure. There's a lack of that.
No, Eddie will call a spade, don't you, Serena? Huh?
Was that politically incorrect?
Oh, well.
That's this show all day.
All right, Mr. Paul, what you got there, brother?
Well, I have been looking at this deal the FCI has got out, and I keep looking at it. I keep running the numbers, and of course, it's my first deal, so I've got some reservations on it, but I keep thinking it's a pretty decent deal.
Okay.
However, I'm kind of wondering why he's selling it if it's that good a deal, and B, why isn't everybody else grabbing it up if it's that decent of a deal? So I just wanted to have you guys take a look at it, see if we can all learn something new. And
I like it. Tarina, you know, I know a little history on Brother Paul. You know that?
Uh-oh.
Do you?
Yeah. Brother Paul's done a little hard money lending in his life.
Uh-huh.
A lot of hard money lending.
Yes, sir.
He probably was a partner in a firm that was the largest hard money lender in Colorado.
For a while, yes, sir. So when
he wants to see if he's missed something, he's probably thought about a lot.
Well, as an ex-engineer as well, I'm really good at crunching numbers. So,
you know, I tease you guys all the time, Paul, but engineers are great at due diligence.
Yep.
All right.
Yeah, this really fits the wheelhouse.
What do we got we can look at here, Matthew?
I'm going to go ahead. Paul, do you want to pull up the exit numbers, or what do you want me to bring up for you?
Why don't we start with the early look in the pictures and stuff that they had.
Okay. So as we're doing that, Paul, just kind of describe the asset to us.
So what it is, it's a house that is in Ohio, smallish town, 12,000, 15,000 people in the town. It is notes for sale for $1,000. When I was going through the history that they had, and of course it's on FCI, so you don't get a whole lot of history yet. But as I could tell, they've looked at it, they've started a foreclosure, and for whatever reason, they decided to stop the foreclosure shortly before they put the note for sale. They have done skip searches and everything, trying to track the owner, previous owner, down. House is overgrown. It's kind of rough. There it is there. The one picture you see on the left, that's actually the garage. So,
hey, Paul.
Yeah?
See, this is the difference between a seasoned guy and somebody that's newer in this business. Because you say, it's kind of rough. And that's how we would say it. So, we have students that would use other adjectives.
Yeah. Yep, that's only the garage. It's not the inside of the house. Yeah. So they pulled the meter. You can see the one down there, lower left. That's the actual inside. That's the only picture you have of the inside of the house. Yeah, it's overgrown, which is typical. I'm not too worried about any of that. But I guess the biggest question is, why would they stop foreclosure? I'm looking at it going, you know, it shouldn't be that much to clean up. There's their skip trace results there. But it really shouldn't take, you shouldn't have to rehab it. We should be able to just clean it up, probably have to finish the foreclosure. It shouldn't take too long to do that. And then either do it on a 50-50 or do it as a owner finance. And, I mean, my first preference is probably owner finance it.
Yeah, so don't disclose to me who the seller is. I don't want you to do that because I know you signed an NDA. But disclose to me, if you would, are they an individual or are they a company? Do they seem to be a sophisticated note owner or an unsophisticated note owner?
I actually don't have any idea.
You can tell by who, right?
I looked out on FCI, and I don't, I mean, you know, they don't tell you who owns it. It's the only note he's selling up there.
How do you know they stopped the foreclosure?
In the history, which he'll get to, there's an Excel sheet, if you want to bring that up, Matt. That was, what did they name that? That was the payment history. Yeah, that one there. If you go down the bottom of the tab, there's a bunch of notes. There's a tab for notes there.
Okay.
To the left there, Matt. There you go.
Right there. And that goes through a whole long history of what was going on with it, skip tracing, all of that. And towards the bottom of that, it says that the lender stopped foreclosure.
Hmm. Where's the... Okay, so it's in a bankruptcy. Was in a bankruptcy.
Was in a bankruptcy. That's been discharged.
And...
So Paul, here's the thing about it. We know Mike Griffith well, that owns FCI. He's a Titanium Mentoring student. I mean, we're very friendly with him, right? And so FCI is just a trade platform. In other words, they don't own a loan, and you know they're just trying to put it up there and do it. The one thing I don't like about this setup is that you've got a question that would either lead you to one of two things. Either they were scared to death to own the collateral, or there's an issue. The bad news is, if you abandon a foreclosure in Ohio, Charles, I'm not sure you can reinstate it.
See, that's that is a good question. I don't know. This
they,
is
just, they just passed this law on fast-tracking in Ohio, Paul, where if it's an abandoned property, it's not long to foreclose, is it, Charles?
6 months max, Eddie.
6 months.
Yep.
But the problem is, I think it's going to cost you about $3,500 to trip the switch on it again.
Okay.
Expense is going to be taxes, code enforcement, all that stuff. The expense is not the cost of the asset.
Yep. There is.
Do you have a BPO on this?
I do not. That one we saw with pictures earlier, which was just an asset company going out to check for ownership, right. Check for vacancy, that kind of thing. They put a value on it of about $15,000. I have done, you know, the Trulia, all those, and I'm pretty comfortable with it if it was, you know, decently fixed up and good in the 50s, 50 to 70.
But you have to know your way out of it. You wouldn't sell it for that otherwise.
Right.
That.
Have you checked the taxes, the back taxes?
$3,600 so far, and there's about $1,000 worth of mowing and, you know, fees and fines and stuff against it as well.
Yeah, so
you go to my exit strategy numbers, Matt, all that's in there.
You know, I would say that's what the seller's issue is. In Ohio, they're not going to let you file the deed unless you bring the taxes current. I kind of almost wonder if they didn't pay their legal bill.
Well, that's the other thing. They figure up their expenses, and they figure up the taxes, and any liens that are filed on it, they spend another $1,000 on the $1,500 on the foreclosure. You know, they're over 50% of the value. And that whoever that seller is may just thought, you know what, I'm just going to cash it, sell the note for cash and move on.
Yeah.
Because, you know, again, you know, there may be some repairs that are going to have to be done on this house. You know you're going to have the trees and yard and stuff cleaned up. Mm-hmm. But you know you're not going to sell it for $15,000. What was the rental on this, Paul?
$450 is what Rent-A-Meter came up with.
Okay.
That's not that good. That's not that strong. Normally, when we see little houses, they rent for $600-$700, $800. You know, Paul, I tell you, I know you're a seasoned guy, and you probably will figure out how to dig yourself out of something, or we'll certainly try to stay with you and help you figure it out. But this is a pretty marginal deal, even at $1,000, because the cost is not the cost of the asset, it's the cost of getting resolution on it.
Yeah. Well, I mean, my fear, I haven't spent any money having anybody go out and look at it, but that was my real question is what are the odds of there being, I mean, if it's structure or something major, which, you know, you and I both know it doesn't take that much to clean something up and fix it up enough for a renter, but everybody else seems to think it's just worth mowing over and rebuilding.
Well, if you're going to do the 50-50, it's got to be 100% legit.
Yeah.
I mean, if you're going to do the 50-50 model, you're going to have to take it to a rent-ready standard, you know, like a Fannie Mae rent-ready standard.
Okay.
And just looking at that asset, I mean, we're throwing darts here, and as you know, Charles has done like probably literally 100,000 foreclosures, so his senses are probably better than mine. But I would say you're going to write a check between $12,000 and $20,000 to bring this up to a standard.
Okay.
You agree with that Mangan?
Yeah.
And here's the problem: your gross rents ain't good enough on that deal to make that work.
Yep. No, I agree with that. If you got to spend that much. The other thought was owner financing it. The interesting part of that town, not a lot of people, but 86% of it is owner occupied. So my one thought was own or finance it. You sell it at 30, leave some value for the buyers. They can then do the fix up. We clean it up, make it presentable, obviously, but finance it, season it, and sell it.
Let me tell you a poker play, okay? If you want to make a poker play, now I'm going to tell you this. You ain't going to file a deed unless you bring taxes current.
Yep.
Okay? And bring code enforcement current. So you're going to write a check for $4,000, close to $5,000?
Yeah, I got $6,675 in it, just figuring roughly legal back taxes.
I don't know that I would figure legal. Okay. What I would do, I'm not a big fan of skip traces, okay? Megan will tell you that I can be pretty animated and fairly entertaining on what I think of skip traces. Here's like the default servicing, oh, we ran a skip trace and we can't find them. Well, shit, I can tell you that before you run the skip trace. They can't find anybody. They never find anybody. You know? Now, I got hundreds of students that are like social media cat daddies, and they can find people every day of the week. So Zarina can find this guy. She's here on the screen. She can find somebody.
Yeah.
She'll hunt him down. So the skip trace is noise to me. I know that's real unconventional because every default servicer in the world does skip traces. Megan, how many times do you see a skip trace really work?
You know, I've probably 1 out of 10, Eddie.
I was thinking 1 out of 1,000, but I will go with your number.
Well, we don't do it. And like you say, Eddie, we don't, just because of the low results, we don't do a lot of skip tracing.
Here's what I'm thinking. If you bought this, Paul, chase around there, get the old guy that's abandoned this property and get him to deed it to you. But the problem is it's a $7,000 poker play or $6,000 poker play. I just don't know. I mean, let me tell you what I don't like about this deal. It doesn't have a high rent value.
Okay.
The property doesn't scare me. I know if you sent a realtor out there, I mean, I could write the script for you before the realtor ever got there. Okay? I mean, it'd be, oh, you're terrible, and oh, you don't, you know, like I'd send a legitimate property inspection company like NPS out there or NDS.
Yeah.
And then you get a real sense of kind of where you are, and that's kind of what we would do, right, Charles? We wouldn't, it kind of, some degree, would be a waste of time sending a realtor out there.
No.
But the reality is the math for selling it on the income approach just doesn't get you there.
Yep. I mean, at 450, it puts you in about 32,000, if I recall, something like that.
And you're easily going to have 15 grand in it.
To rent it, yeah. So let me ask this, and this is more educational than what I would do, but if I got stuck with this, or I took this, how hard is it to do an owner finance with it, just cleaning it up? Minimal money, 5,000, 8,000, maybe 10 to clean it up, and then owner finance it, $30,000, leave them some room to do their work and fix it up.
Well, it's interesting you say that, because Manga and I have been on calls today for about an hour and a half or 2 hours total today on this very subject with the guys at NAA who are the pros and lots of units. If this house isn't sound and habitable, it won't sell.
I agree.
In other words, if there's an issue with the plumbing, the electrical, if it doesn't have a furnace, all that stuff, it's not going to sell. If if it's cosmetic, they can sell them all day long. I mean, they're like crazy confident they can sell it. It's just what it takes to get it to be habitable.
Okay.
You've done a lot of hard money lending, haven't you?
Yes, sir.
You ever seen somebody that has a cheap house, and by the time they get done throwing in all the expenses to get the rehab, it's just probably one they should have passed?
Yes, sir.
I think this is that one.
Okay. Fair enough. That's the beauty of this call.
Am I passing an opportunity here?
No, you're right. You're on it. I mean, you know, we don't know the interior condition, really, and what are the mechanical issues with the house? Is there plumbing, you know, or is there, are the pipes all busted? You're going to have to replace it. So you really don't know what expenses you're going to get into.
He's got a field service report here. Who did that, Paul?
That was what the owner put up there. It was, if you scroll down, Matt, the company's at the top. I can't.
Sandcastle
Tools, do you know them?
No, I don't know them. John.
Megan used to be with.
Gosh, never heard of them.
Now, he could, one of the biggest in the country, and he knew all the property press people in the whole country, you know, field service people. So this is probably not a highly recognized operator, or Charles would probably know him.
I would have thought it had been a more detailed report, though, if they got inside the house. He sent you one picture?
I think they got one picture of the back of the kitchen that they could see from the back door, but they didn't get in the house.
Okay, so they actually did not get in the house, okay.
No. So, you're right. I mean, I don't know what it looks like. I'm just trying to size that we're spending money to have NAA go out there and tell me what it looks like, or is it one just to pass and wait for a better deal?
You know what? I'm excited to see you get your first deal and get rolling. We really are. I don't think I'd buy this deal.
Okay. Fair enough.
What old Jimmy Napier say? It ain't the deal you pass up that'll keep you up at night.
That's it. I've had a few of those fix and flips in my time. I've had a few of those loans in my time.
All right, Paul. Thank you, sir.
Thank you. You guys have a wonderful afternoon.
Okay. Thank
you, sir. Thank you.
Hey, Karina, we're going to have to send out a little email, aren't we, about people on the webinar? Webinar attendee?
Oh, yeah.
So if you have a family member or a business partner that's a partner with you and you guys should be in the system like your name and their name, they need to independently register for the webinar. So, like, we see people that are, like, on the webinar three times. That ain't really cool. Mm-mm. So we're going to fix that. Because it's a closed meeting, so we'll send out an email and kind of do that. So if that's something that you guys need to kind of clean up, each one of you should get communication, and you should be able to do an independent registration. I believe that's correct. Check on that, Zarina, if you will. I don't want to make sure we're treating somebody wrong here.
That's correct.
All right. Mr. Brian.
Good afternoon, everybody.
How you doing?
Hey.
I'm well. I'm recovering from a great summer summit, and just a tip to all of you and your staff. You guys just did a wonderful job.
Thank you very much. All right, Counselor, what you got?
Well, I guess I'll give my disclaimer up front. I'm the only one on the webinar under my name, and I've never sent anybody on a rooftop. So.
Oh, yeah.
Anyway, I just want to make sure everybody knew that Eddie was not talking about me.
Yeah, we got to call somebody here in a little while on that. We don't know the story. We just know that's what the payer said.
Hey, there you go. Well, this is a real select issue that I just wanted to get your advice with. I have a single family property. It has been abandoned, and I know that because I had a door knock go out and verify that for me. The first time they went out was about a month ago, and there was a note on the door from the buyer that simply said, "This house is not vacant. We are moving to Michigan." attempts to follow up on phone with them has been fruitless. But then the door knock that I hired to go by just before Summer Summit reported that the house not only has been abandoned, but also was left open, door, exterior door off the hinges, all that kind of stuff. So I paid them to go ahead and secure the property so that it would be safe from vandalism. But I also asked them to go through and send me some of these pictures. And I know for you, the nice Christmas tree right there and that one that's on the screen.
Yeah, I'm seeing some pretty good looking stuff in there.
I would have loved to have had some of that stuff when I was in college. anyway.
Wish she'd had some of that pink, those kid toys when she was a year ago.
That's right. I don't want to go in and do a cleaning on a house and then find out that I'm in trouble with the buyer, but I talked with the attorney that I've retained to do the termination of the land contract. I talked with him this morning, and from a legal standpoint, he said he was okay if I wanted to go ahead and get the house cleaned out, especially on the exterior where I didn't send you those pictures. There's some stuff in the yard and the grass is overgrown, and you know, I don't want the city nagging at me, and he agreed in a small town. But I wanted to get your all's experience. I mean, legally aside, whether my lawyer tells me it's okay, I want to know what your experience was, because what I'm looking at is this termination being concluded probably around the end of July, he thought. And my thought was go ahead and get the house cleaned out, get it spiffed up so that, you know, on August 1, you know, I've got a sign in the yard and I'm going down the road, but I don't want to do something and then have it bite me. So what do you all think?
Well, that blonde-headed fellow over there on the panel with me, he'd be the guy.
The guy that looks like he's been out in the sun for 6 weeks?
Exactly.
Hey, Brian. So, Brian, let me ask you this. I mean, one of the first things I would definitely do is get the exterior cleaned up, get the yard cleaned up, and get that house presentable on the outside. So when that city truck's going down the street, he's not sticking a code violation on it.
Excellent.
Sounds like they've already left. Like you say, they've already moved off to Michigan. They're not coming back. I would just make sure that your vendor is going to confirm that there's nothing real valuable inside that house as far as, you know, not a nice living room suit or a dining room suit or anything that would have. Typically, the way we look at it, if we felt like the value of the material inside or the property inside the house was over $500, we would usually do a personal property eviction. I don't recommend that. But if there was something of real value in that house, like a dining room suit and hutch or something like that, you know, I might move that into a garage or something until I own the property, I complete the foreclosure, just in case they were to come back. I don't really see a problem with it, though, going in there and starting to clean it down, because it looked like a mostly trash to me.
Right.
I definitely would make sure it's secure, and I definitely make sure the trash is cleaned up on the outside and the yard is already, and the yard's maintained.
Great. Okay, thank you. I think that helps get me down the road. So that's good advice, and I'll follow up with that then. So I guess just for my benefit as well as the other students on the call, on this $500 rule, which I know is not hard and fast, but if I had something or found something, you mentioned garage. I mean, could I just have my laborers move those things into the garage, secure the garage, and then go to town on the house?
Yep, you can just move it into the garage. And, and what I do, just make sure you've got plenty of pictures. I mean, that's the one thing I always tell the vendors. You make sure you have pictures of everything in every room. So if they need to go in a room and take 5 pictures from 5 different angles of that room. So if the borrower ever came back and said, you took my Rolex watch, it was laying on top of the dresser, you got an angle picture shot of every room. So, you know, that's what they're going to look at. And the judge is going to say, nope, it's a bunch of junk. You know, I mean, it's just better be safe than sorry.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I thought that would be the case, but I appreciate your time on the call here. That's helpful just to give me some comfort that I'm going down the right road. Thank you.
Yeah, and this is a great question. Charles, let me expound on that a little bit. Sometimes we tell a student, you know, hands off, right? Mm-hmm. And sometimes we tell a student, like you just told Brian, go on and do it. Just take anything that seems of significant value, more than $500, and just put it in a sealed off area, right? And so I want to draw, just before we leave that, give us the distinction of when you say don't and when you say it's okay.
Well, just looking at these pictures here, I didn't see much of any value there. Just a bunch of strong clothes, piece of furniture, and a Christmas tree. But what we used to always, what we would use as our kind of our guide was if we felt like anything in that house had a value of over $500, then, and it could be combined value, so anything that was over $500 in value, we would either move the stuff to the garage and do a personal property eviction or complete the foreclosure, but we'd leave it in that garage until the foreclosure was completed.
All right, so you're going to do a complete trash out.
Right.
You're going to clear the house. You're not going to rehab it yet.
Not going to rehab it yet. Not going to do anything to the house. All I'm doing is cleaning it up and securing it.
Caring. And you want to clean up the outside because you don't want to draw attention to the code enforcement guys.
That's correct. And I never put anything outside the garage. If there was trash in the yard that the city would issue a violation on, I'd have it hauled off. So if I went up, there's yard grown up, there's wood, old wheelbarrow, some barrels, tires, whatever it was in that front yard, now that stuff I'd have hauled off. Because the city don't care if it's personal property or not. If you're cluttering the property and it's a nuisance in the neighborhood, the city's going to cite you, and if you don't clean it up, the city's going to come clean it up for you. And they're not going to put it in the garage. So it's the interior contents that I would move to a garage if I felt like there was any value to those content.
Okay, cool.
Some attorneys may tell you too, Eddie, that after you foreclose, they may just say, let's send a 30-day notice that we have stuff in storage or in the garage, and, you know, giving them notice to come get it, and then they'll haul it off if they don't come get it.
And if you needed to move on with the house, then you could go store it somewhere if you had to.
Yeah, you could put it in a storage facility too, and then if the borrower comes back, they pay the storage bill, and then they get their stuff.
Cool.
Excellent. Thank you.
Thanks, Mark.
All right, Matthew, what you got, buddy? It doesn't matter what the question is, Zarina's going to cover this one.
It's always
so, well, the Kathy is wondering if this scenario would make a difference if it was a longer foreclosure, say 12 months.
If it was a longer foreclosure?
Yes.
No. I mean, I'd still go in there if the borrowers gave indication that they were moving and were heading to Michigan and left a number. Even if it was 12 months down the road, I'd go ahead and clean the house. If I wanted to go ahead and clean the house, I wouldn't do anything else other than secure it and then make sure the outside is maintained and the trash out or the yard trash removed and mowed.
All right. I am looking at. Did you guys get the email from John? Is that something that we're going to cover today, or do we want to wait until tomorrow so that we can look through everything? John just sent in a question. He had a question on title reports. We hadn't had a chance to look it over yet. So
do we have?
We're about to go to open mic, so I was just checking.
Do we have the title report?
He sent the O&E and the title search in, so.
Yeah, I mean, if we got it.
Yeah.
Let me grab John. John, go ahead.
Hey, John.
Hello, Eddie. Can you guys hear me okay?
Yes, sir. Mm-hmm. How are you?
Doing well. So, Dean Bolton, Suscue Home Solutions, and I, we just bought a note through FCI where the note seller indicated there were secondary liens on the property, so they started taking it to a sheriff's sale. We did a title search, and we only saw the first note. We didn't see any of the other liens on the property, and we're just curious to why they wouldn't have shown up on the title search.
So which one are you referencing here?
So the titlesearch.pdf doesn't shows the first mortgage, but it doesn't show other liens. And the O&E report is another file that I sent Matt that does show, and it does show second liens and stuff that should hopefully be removed during the sheriff's sale.
Right, if they're second, so they'll be removed during the foreclosure sale. So so the property report, so this report that we have up here, correct, doesn't show the second lien. Is that what you're saying there?
I'm about to open up a different one, so it's a little easier to read, so give me a second. Except for that, hold on, let me zoom in for you, Charles.
Alrighty. There we go. Thank you, sir.
Charles can't see.
Alrighty, man. That's actually a question. When the title, when they miss, so you did one before you bought it, one after you bought it, correct?
The O&E that I sent out, the note seller actually sent to me after we did the title search that didn't show any liens.
Okay, and then ProTitle is the one you pulled, correct?
Yes, and that's brand new.
There we go.
Anyway, this goes to sheriff's sale towards the end of this month.
So there's several, looks like there's some judgments there. Not sure why those didn't reflect on his title report. So the one he provided you at the time you purchased the asset didn't reflect these, correct?
The other way around. He told me about the liens.
Okay. And who was your property report through?
It may have been ordered through FCI. I don't have the answer to that.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not sure why it just didn't show that it didn't look like it picked any of those up, you know, those judgments. And
I don't know. Record. It says none of record.
I'm sorry?
It says none of record. And this was a full title search.
Well, I mean, it still should have been. There apparently is record of judgments and liens, and so I'm not sure why they didn't pick anything up. They show the taxes. They show the chain, the transfer chain, but it doesn't show any judgments or liens as to where Pro Title reports apparently a more thorough report, and it's showing all these.
Should we ask for $100 back on this title search? It doesn't cook.
I might push back on them and say, hey, look, guys, there's four judgments and liens here. I definitely push back and ask them just out of curiosity why they didn't reflect.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, it shows everything here as far as the tax information, ownership information, shows you the chain of title from A, B, C, D. It takes you through the whole chain of title, and then all of a sudden it just stops. Mm-hmm. I don't think they did a judgment lien search on this one. And again, the good thing is that you're going to foreclose and you're going to wipe these out. But, I mean, it could have been a worst case scenario. Mm-hmm. So the lesson is, you know, make sure that when you're ordering these title reports, you know, you just confirm when they tell you there's no judgments and liens. And I'm not saying that you can't get a title report. that says none of record under judgments and liens. I mean, we see them all the time. We buy properties, but, you know, this particular one, I mean, this particular note here, when there's four of them and two of them are seconds, that's a big question right there. I'd be going back asking why nothing pulled up under their judgments and liens.
Do you think a different type of title search was done or something?
No, I mean, a title search, when you order a title search, they automatically search tax records, they automatically search the mortgage deed records, they search the judgments and liens. there's not one title search that should provide you anything less than another title search.
Okay.
They may look different, but same concept. An abstractor knows what they're looking for. When they prepare a title search, abstractors in these plants know what they're looking for. They should know what they're looking for.
Okay. Well, we should be good, though, because we are going to become the owner of record as it goes to sheriff sale, and we might actually have a real quick flip here for us, or quick payoff. I have a follow-up question from the last conversation. We sent somebody out there to look at this house and found that the back door had been broken into. So we had somebody change the lock on the back door. That makes sense, right? And we think we want to have the lawn mowed and the outside cleaned up before the sheriff's sale. Do we have a right to do that?
We do.
Since we're not the borrower?
You do. So anytime you buy a note, and especially on a vacant property, you have the right to prevent that property from being cited for violations and to protect and preserve that property until you take title to that property.
It's even stronger than that. You actually kind of have the obligation.
Correct.
Okay.
Hey, Charles?
When we put an asset in foreclosure in the summertime, we have the lawn mowed. What, Charles, every once a month? Every 3 weeks?
Every 2 weeks. We have them on just a reoccurring lawn cut. If they're vacant. And sometimes I end up mowing them if they're occupied.
This one's vacant.
Yeah.
We actually managed to get pictures of the inside since entry was accessible.
Hey, Charles, let me ask you something. Charles?
Yeah, I'm here.
Look at your parcel number.
You what?
You've got 8.000-23. On the other one, you have 9-000-23. Would that have made a difference?
There's two lots here that are combined.
Oh.
That's why. It's two different parcels, correct?
Two parcels are mentioned, yes.
Okay.
But I thought that it was one property. Is that going to cause any problems with the sheriff's sale?
Well, it shouldn't. We just want to make sure that you're being taxed on the right parcel. You want to confirm the legal description. Because if you look at one report, it does reference parcel numbers 7109, 13280009, and then the county record shows 008. Now, could they have replatted it? Could there have been some type of you want to just confirm that, because it looks like there's two different lots here. It looks like the house sits on one lot, and then there's an adjoining lot with a $5,000 value. So it looks like the property sits on two properties, on two lots, or has two lots attached.
Okay, so when it goes to sheriff's sale, it'll be for both of them, right?
Correct. But it's going to be based on the legal. So you want to make sure you compare the legal on your deed you know, to the legal on the title.
Okay.
You want to make sure the legal description matches on both your deed and your title.
Okay. Yeah, there's a description.
Lot number 146.
Usually when they're platted like this, you can just pull the county plat up and look at it and see if they're like next to each other and all that stuff.
Yeah, you do want to just have the attorney compare that, compare the legals, because if you look, let's see here. Man, I can't see it jumping up and down.
I was getting a legal description on both of them together, Joe.
Okay, so here's a problem. This legal description shows lot 144 and lot 145.
Yes.
All right. The legal description, I believe, on that title showed lot 146. Oh, there we go.
Uh-huh.
So there's a problem.
Eagle eye.
There's a problem. You need to point this out to your attorney quickly. It looks like 146 is a lot that's worth about $5,000. I'm not sure if there's a property on it or not.
God, Mangan, you got to start charging for this.
I'm telling you.
Are you following me?
So I know that I need to make sure that both of them are included, but I don't know what or where. But I do have, there is a lawyer involved with the sheriff's sale and with all of this.
Look, I'm going to tell you something. You just need to stop and lay this stuff out and go figure out what you think your legal description is based on the security documents and back that off against the title policy. And you need to kind of get a sense of what your issue is even before you call the attorney.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so let's go down this. So the assignment of mortgage... Okay, there's the legal right there. So the assignment of mortgage says lot 144 and 145. And yet your title search says lot 146. So your title search looks like they may have done it on the wrong property. So this exhibit A, now is this the legal description here that we're looking at part of your title search?
Yes, this is from the title search.
Okay. Wow. Matt, what's the other report reflect as a legal?
This is the O&E. So this is the one from, let's see what page, 16. So okay. This is the one from Pro Title.
All right, so you got two different legals. That's why I didn't show any judgments or liens on there, because you've got two different properties. You got title for two separate properties.
Which means that Pro Title got it right and the other guy's got it wrong.
Correct. Yep. Your special warranty deed.
Before this conclusion ever came up, that's exactly what was going through my mind.
So before your deed, the deed that they conveyed to you, conveyed the property to you, is it 144 or 145? The legal description?
I'm not sure.
Is your property address 3812 York Street?
Yes.
Okay. So take your Pro Title, compare your legal description on the deed to your entity to the legal description on Pro Title. Make sure they match.
Okay.
And I'm going to tell you something. This is from a guy that has dyslexia and is not a very technical personality. You need to map this out. You need to get you a yellow pad, and you need to start writing it out. Mortgage says this. Title search says this. This title, you need to map all that out, and you need to know your facts before you call the attorney. Don't rely on them. Stop and go figure this out. You may get disappointed.
Okay.
This actually was a great case study.
Was a great case study. Dang, Mangan, I can't believe you figured this out.
Yeah, that was pretty sharp.
Green and I were talking earlier. We'll have to stop. Well, we have to slow down on that.
I'm going to put my glasses back on now. Got a headache now, so.
All right.
Okay, so you don't think this is...
You look like a trained professional, Mangan.
You don't think this is a problem. We just have to make sure that it's clear. It's not that we bought something that's a problem, right?
Well, make sure what you're foreclosing and what you're getting is what you think you're getting. So, you know, you go back to the legal documents. I think ProTitle's got it right. And
now you get a sense of why we use ProTitle.
But, I mean, you're looking at the legal, but you said that's your address. So, you know, if that's the address you bought, then that's the legal, 144 and 145. And 146 is your next-door neighbor.
Okay, so the only the title search looks wrong so far, but I'll have to verify that.
I want to verify with the legal documents in the original title that, you know, that's the legal that they conveyed to you is 144 and 145.
Inside the mortgage agreement, right?
Yes. So the assignment of the mortgage that they gave to you, you just want to make sure that the legal, what they assigned you, is 144 and 145.
Okay.
Here's what I'm going to say. It's not that the attorney doesn't have the competency to figure this out. It's not that his paralegal doesn't have the competency to figure it out. It's just when they have a big workload, a big caseload of stuff, you were the most motivated person in this transaction. And taking ownership of it is that entrepreneur spirit. Were you at Summer Summit with us?
No, been at some other classes.
Oh, my God, you just missed the greatest story that you've ever heard in your life.
You mean that I didn't hear?
The title of the story was Check the Man on the Twitch.
That was a good story.
Oh, I won't make the other 100 people go through the story, but at some point when you see the film, you'll get this story. But it's just watch for other people that are helping you to make sure they're not falling asleep.
Okay.
That's the moral to the story.
Well, thank you very much, guys.
Thank you.
That was cool.
All right.
Good job, Mangan.
So we are, I'd say, got about, 7 minutes left. Do you want to see if we got any open mic questions, or how do we want to handle the end of the call? So it's so rare that we actually aren't running over and I'm screaming at you to cut it short, so I don't know what to do now.
Yeah, like Matt texting me. You know what you're talking about? Like Matt texting me?
Move on,
Eddie, move on.
Let's go.
All right, yeah, you can bust it open here. Let's see what you got.
So, Charles, just to confirm this, is there a difference between an O&E report and a title sheet?
Really, there's not. I mean, it's a different format of a title report, okay? We used to always say that, you know, we don't want O&Es, we want title searches. I've asked vendors that say, well, our title search is an O&E. It's just it was the title they used on it. But you want to make sure that you have a full search. You want to make sure that you have all past due taxes, judgments, mortgages, or records. You want to make sure that it's a full search. Now,
the industry standard, what they call it. It's O&E stands for occupancies and encumbrances, and a title search. We kind of old school, all of us around here, we kind of think an O&E is a little bit of a stripped down version. Right, Charles?
Right.
It's a difference between an English saddle and a Western saddle.
You just went like,
saddle, I ain't got no saddle horn.
And a lot of them don't even do O&E reports, Eddie, anymore. You know, it's 20 years ago, that was what everybody got, was an O&E report. Now they just tell you it's a title search. So don't even use the name O&E. When you order it, just tell ProTitle. They know We want a full title search. Pro Title definitely knows what we're looking for. So.
And Charles, Jackie's wanting to know, would a utility bill appear on either the O&E or title search if it's overdue?
If it's been filed of record, it will be on the O&E or title report, yes. But keep in mind, not always, utility companies may not always file public records, so you may want to call the utility companies just to see if there's any outstanding
claims. Pro Title will go search these, for an additional fee, they'll go do extra searches. They'll search, homeowner associations. They'll search utilities. They'll search other unrecorded things, but they have to get on the phone and do it. So you can order that from them, or you can go do it yourself. It's not something we would order it. We wouldn't go do it ourselves because we're trying to be scalable. But if you're a small operator, it's kind of 50-50 as to what you choose. What else, Matt? You going to open up the lines here?
Well, we kind of got about 4 minutes left, so...
I think we're good enough. Zarina, you got anything to say? Before we sentence you, you got anything to say?
Sentence? What'd I do?
What do you think of sentence?
I do have something to say. Yeah, your State of the Industry PowerPoint was really good. And it is now posted up on the forum. So if you guys go over to the blog, you can get your own copy of it. So it is, yeah, I did want to say something.
Brian Winberry recorded my when I had Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton in for a visit. And we now have it on Note School's Facebook page.
Really? That's cool. You know, after that, I was sitting next to Debbie outside. And I was like, huh, I wonder how come he didn't ask me to be Hillary.
Because you'd have been looking down at Donald.
I'm only like that much taller than Bob. It's not much.
Zarina, I was in a meeting. I sat through most all Summer Summit inside. I had a meeting that I had to go to before some people left town. And so I had to step outside, and I missed. Sadly, I know it's on film, and I only watch it, but I had to miss your presentation. But I had like 100 people come up to me and tell me, listen, the only thing that's jeopardizing your job security is you can't get close to being funny as I am.
Marina was good, no doubt.
Did you see it, Megan?
I did see it.
Just there, yeah.
But was it pretty funny?
She did a great job. I'm going to give her that. I didn't know Zarina could be that funny.
Well, she's had a great trainer, let's just say.
Yeah.
Zarina ran the webinars for about 5 years for me, so she's heard every Eddie-ism you ever thought about.
Mm-hmm. For everybody who didn't get to 10 Summer Summit, we're sorry you missed it, but definitely plan on being at the Node Expo.
Oh, yeah, that's going to be awesome.
Yeah. Okay, cool. So you put the State of the Industry up.
I did.
And also, yep. Matt, we announced as part of the Turnkey Flipping Academy. This is what we used to call the 50-50 model, and I'm giving all the mentor students the free training for the Turnkey Flipping Academy. Now, we haven't turned the switch on yet, so please. Just hold up. We'll send it to you. And it's in Infusionsoft. If you're an active mentor student, you're in Infusionsoft, so we're not going to forget you.
Yep.
We'll get it. Okay? Don't be texting Zarina this afternoon, where's my Turnkey Flipping Academy key?
I got to put my cell phone on lockdown. I get text messages. I'm like, who the heck is this? So I don't know who spilled the beans.
Cell phone number. I don't even know what to do on that. But... you can start using RentFax if you want to, rentfaxpro.com/EddieSpeed. That's lowercase Eddie Speed, rentfaxpro.com. And the promo code is going to be lowercase Eddie30. Now, Zarina, tell me why it's 30.
Because it's a 30% discount.
Isn't that catchy? Yeah, it's a 30% discount on the RentFax Pro, and that is that is basically this property analytics report that's part of the 50-50 model. So, anyway, there's a lot of you thanking us for the summer summit, and it really was a great time. And yeah, Kenneth, we got you, brother. We got you.
Serena, real quick, where
on what's the woman on the Twitch? You know, so it's like it could be watch the person on the Twitch.
Watch the person on the Twitch. Go up to where it says blog, Matt. Scroll up. Hit bloggity blog.
Oh, there we go.
All right. There you go.
Oh, is Lisa on the call? I want Lisa, watch behind my head. Huh?
Watch. Yeah.
Yeah, look here, right there. Look what we got hanging up there. Lisa brought me a picture. Very nice.
We can't talk about
it. You're out, Ray, we can't say. It's a. Zarina wanted me to, like, get eyeball close to it and bring it over. No,
well,
it's really cool.
It's
something to take up to the Note Recovery Center, and it is consistent with the decor up there. And it's not anything racy or something like that, so it's really cool. Thank you, Lisa.
All good.
We did film stuff, and so it is.
When we put it on the membership site, we're going to make an announcement, guys. So don't worry about missing it.
I tell you one thing, Zarina, that you really pushed hard is the forum, and this is something that is big, big. And we want it to tie in more with what we see on the webinars.
Yeah.
And we're going to really continue to talk about what that looks like. But Martha did a big thing on partials, and it is on the forum. It's got if you got partial questions.
Yeah.
Where do they go, Zarina?
It's going to be on the forum. Go to the
performing
section. Yeah.
Serena's got a really cool section up there about partials, and Martha and Susan and a bunch of people worked like tons of hours developing a flow chart for partials. We are on the final stages of working out an agreement with Guardian Law to do an automated process to fill out the form and to handle the escrow of preparing a partial agreement. So you can use them as the custodian for the money and to prepare the agreement. That's really a Monday night topic. I shouldn't be talking about that.
Well, if they upgrade, they can see that. How you like them?
Right.
Just like them big wide seats on the airplane, right?
That's right.
All right.
All right.
Okay. What else? Zarina, is that everything you got?
Yeah. Yep.
Man, we're glad you're back on the webinars with us.
Good to see you every week.
Yeah. We're gonna start selecting the time that Charles is on the webinars with us. We're gonna start zeroing in on when they have specific questions about anything about asset management, legal issues, servicing issues, and so we're gonna be a little more strategic in identifying those questions so Mr. Mangan can be on there. As he continues to manage more and more assets, you know, hearing me be on here talking about whatever's not really doing him a lot of good. It is a great deal of entertainment. Did you hear where I got him the other day where I said he was born in the webinar?
Oh, yeah. Serena?
What? What happened?
I think Eddie's comment was, I'm the funny one, Mr. Mangan's the boring one. That's what he said. When he least expects it, remember that.
I'm like Sergeant Schultz on Hogan's Heroes. I know nothing. All right, guys, have a good day.
Good night,
guys.
Have a good one.
Bye.